It's saying that American citizens are now to be declared enemy combatants and treated as such through this presidential regulation.
This is the True Health Report, where critical appraisal fuels true freedom.
Hi, I'm Dr. Andy Kaufman, and today I'm going to talk about an important consequence of law that you may have an inclination about, but you probably don't really understand or know why this is the case. But have you ever wondered why it seems that many acts the government carries out are not consistent with what the Constitution says? In fact, many of you may have either heard of someone or done this yourself where you tried to make a constitutional argument in some kind of court case and the judge pretty much threw it out or ignored it. Well, there is good reason for this, although it's not good in terms of justified, but it's good in terms of there is a clear explanation. And it really goes back to 1933. And today I'm going to tell you exactly what is going on with the Constitution and why it's essentially suspended in the present day. So before I get into the how and the why, let's just review some evidence that, in fact, the Constitution is not being followed appropriately in this day and age. So let me bring up some slides here with some quotes from the United States Constitution. So this is Article 1, Section 10, and it reads, "No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts." And this was always the case up until 1933. In fact, you used to be able to take a treasury note or a dollar bill as it was pre-1933, go to the Treasury Department in Washington, D.C., exchange it to them, and they would give you back the equivalent in gold or silver coin. After 1933, and you can certainly test this today if you like, if you take a dollar bill or any denomination thereof to the Treasury Department, you can, in fact, exchange it for another dollar bill. So another paper note rather than gold or silver, because gold and silver coin is not being done presently, even though it's required by the Constitution that it is the only kind of money. And we know this to be true because we know that we are no longer on the gold standard. And this is the reason why we have such high degrees of inflation and deflation cycles, and why the currency is being devalued and debased over time by simply creating more debt out of the obligation of the United States without having anything of real value that would count as actual money backing it up. So there's a lot of instability in the system. And of course, there's a lot more to our financial system than this, but it's beyond the scope of today's presentation. So we have one clear section of the Constitution that is not currently being followed. And let's look at another section. Now, this is about the presidential powers. And you can see here that it says the president shall be commander in chief of the Army and Navy of the United States when called into the actual service of the United States. Now, how does the president get called into actual service? Well, it happens right here. It is a congressional power. So it says here the Congress shall have the power to declare war. So that means the initiation of an act of war has to come from Congress, and then that power is delegated to the president to be the commander in chief of the Army and Navy and other branches of the military. Now, what we've seen carry out in modern presidential term after another by multiple different presidents is that the presidents have unilaterally, without the approval or order from Congress, taken military action of war. Most recently, this occurred in Iran. And it goes further than that, because if we look in more detail here on this slide, it also says to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. And this is the doctrine that would have allowed the government to send military troops into Los Angeles recently during the immigration protests and quote unquote riots. But in this case, again, the president took unilateral action rather than even asking the Congress for their approval. So we know from the president's actions in terms of these war powers that were granted to the Congress that the Constitution is not being followed. Now, of course, I could give many, many other examples. In fact, if we look just at the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, we can find many, many examples of government action and legislation that violate that 10th Amendment, including most likely the Real ID Act and many, many others. So it's pretty clear that many of the provisions of the Constitution are not being followed at present. So how can this be the case? So I want to direct your attention to this excellent analysis here, the War and Emergency Powers, a special report on the national emergency in the United States. And this largely draws upon a congressional report generated in 1973 that's referenced in here and is in the congressional record. So it's something you can find on the Library of Congress website. Now, I'm going to show you a variety of quotes that are taken from the congressional record. And let's start with this one. I think of all the damnable heresies that have ever been suggested in connection with the Constitution, the doctrine of emergency is the worst. It means that when Congress declares an emergency, there is no Constitution. This means it's death. It is the very doctrine that the German Chancellor is invoking today in the dying hours of the parliamentary body of the German Republic. Now, this, of course, was back in 1933. So we're talking about the Nazi party here and comparing the government powers to the powers of the Chancellor of Germany. And that allowed, obviously, World War II and what happened in Germany to go forward. But we can see from this that the chief issue here is that when an emergency is declared, it can suspend some and or all of the provisions of the Constitution. So could this be what's going on in the present day and age? Let us read further here, because it says that since March of the 9th, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared emergency. Now, that was stated in 1973. 40 years later. So the emergency that was declared in 1933 that we're going to eventually get to remained in effect at least until 1973, but I'm going to argue that it's actually still in effect today, and I'll show you the evidence to that. And we can also read from the congressional record from 1933 that this vast range of powers taken together, and this is talking about the emergency powers, confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad. So this is the unconstitutional power that I was describing in the earlier examples. Institute martial law, right, which is what happened during the COVID lockdowns. Seize and control all transportation and communication. Regulate the operation of private enterprise. So that's business in the private. Restrict travel. And in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. And this situation has continued uninterrupted since March 9th of 1933. And, you know, it goes on to further say that a majority of the people in the United States, and at this point, I would say 100% of the people in the United States have lived all their lives under emergency rule. So how did this mechanistically play out? Well, it all originates with a reference in 1933 back to the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917. And this was an act passed by Congress at the outset of World War I to govern any business dealings primarily regarding foreign entities with which the United States may be at war with. Okay. And what it said in the important section 5B, okay, because this is the part that I'm going to explain is the key of this whole mystery. Okay. It states here, the president may investigate, regulate, or prohibit under such rules and regulations as he may prescribe by means of licenses or otherwise, any transactions in foreign exchange, export or earmarking of gold or silver coin or bullion or currency, transfer of credit in any form other than credits related solely to transactions to be executed wholly within the United States. Now, that highlighted language is key because it creates an exception that American citizens doing business with other American citizens are exempt from this regulation by the president. And in fact, in an earlier section of the original 1917 Act, it also states that U.S. citizens are an exception from the Trading with the Enemies Act in totality. Okay, so what changed between 1917 and 1933? So in 1933, there was an amendment to the Trading with the Enemies Act. And this here, what I'm showing on this slide is actually Congress's approval of the amendment. And what they say here is the actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, and proclamations heretofore or hereafter taken or promulgated, made, or issued by the President of the United States or the Secretary of the Treasury since March 4th, 1933, pursuant to the authority conferred by Subdivision B of Section 5, once again, 5B, of the Act of October 6, 1917, which is the Trading with the Enemies Act, as amended. Okay, so in other words, the amendment to Section 5B is included in what Congress is talking about here, are hereby approved and confirmed. So the president amended the Trading with the Enemies Act, Section 5B, and this is Congress approving it. And in fact, this is in the United States Code presently, this approval of the amendment. It's in Title 12, Section 95, Subsection B. So you can look that up if you want, but that's where this text is taken from. So what is the amended language? It is right here is the amended language that was approved by Congress. And so this is Section 5B of the Trading with the Enemies Act. And the first part is the same right here that during a time of war or any other period of national emergency declared by the president. So the president has the power to declare the emergency and then is given these emergency powers once the emergency is declared, which include that they may themselves or through any agency they designate, investigate, regulate, or prohibit under such rules and regulations as he may prescribe by means of license or otherwise any transactions in foreign exchange, transfers of credit between or payments by banking institutions as defined by the president, and export, hoarding, melting, or earmarking of gold or silver coin or bullion or currency by any person within the United States or any place subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So now the exception for transactions in the United States among American citizens is gone. So this amendment essentially applies the Trading with the Enemy Act now to Americans directly. So in other words, it's saying that American citizens are now to be declared enemy combatants and treated as such through this presidential regulation. So all of commerce, banking, finance is under this provision right now of this emergency regulations. And this is how we're able to have transactions without gold or silver constitutional money, because the president made up different rules that we have to follow and are subject to.
You've seen it all fall apart. Medicine, education, science, government. All upside down, all corrupted, all hollow. You opted out, even when your friends called you paranoid, even when your family stopped inviting you over for dinner, even when your community made you feel like the crazy one. You walked away from the lies, but no one ever handed you the blueprint for what comes next. That's why I created the True Living Fellowship. It's where we start building not just new ideas, but a new way of being, one that's based in natural law, health freedom, and conscious living. Each month, I host live masterclasses and Q&A sessions where we go deep into the topics that matter most for your health and sovereignty. You'll also get access to our private community where you can connect with others who've also chosen truth over convenience. You'll also get the six pillars of True Living framework: health, family and fellowship, learning, self-governance, connection to nature, and spirituality. Plus, access an invaluable library of past masterclasses covering everything from detoxing your home, living tax-free and independent learning, to meditation, emergency preparedness, and speaking your truth with family without shame or self-abandonment. Membership is just $25 a month, less than the price of that random subscribe and save supplement you're not even sure is doing anything. And you can cancel anytime. If you're ready to stop surviving the collapse of the old systems and start building what comes next, I'd love to personally meet you inside the True Living Fellowship.
And this is just to show you that you can find this information in mainstream sources. So I'm not telling you anything that is occulted in any way. I'm not giving you stuff that's not correct or accurate. This is all documented from the congressional record, presidential proclamations, various statutes and acts of law, and even Wikipedia pages. So in this Wikipedia page, it describes Executive Order 6102, which I believe is also Proclamation 2039, signed by FDR, forbidding the hoarding of gold coin, gold bullion, and gold certificates within the continental United States. And this was carried out under the authority of the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917, as amended by the Emergency Banking Relief Act. And that's where that statute where the Congress approved the amendment was originally codified. So here we have an example of the president being able to order basically everyone's gold and silver to be seized by the government, taken away. Now, they did pay a nominal price, and then as soon as they confiscated all of the gold, they raised the price of gold. So what the government now had was much more valuable in terms of purchasing power at that time. So we can see here, this power was not granted under the Constitution and would be illegal, right? Because the president has no authority to seize property from the citizens. But because of this emergency situation and suspension of the Constitution, now property can be seized because of this emergency situation. And I just want to follow up as what has happened since then, because some sources and some legal scholars may say that the emergency from 1933 has actually ended at this time and is no longer in effect. So this is another report from the Congress, and you can see at the top that I got it from the Library of Congress website, because in the late 1970s, there were two acts that were passed with regard to national emergencies that were trying to limit the powers of emergencies, because what Congress found in 1973, right, with this emergency carrying on for four decades, is that there was a rife opportunity for the president to take advantage of this situation and do things which were not justified. So they tried to put some limits, but these limits were mostly lip service, in my opinion. You can certainly look into the details, but I think here is the key finding that is from this congressional report, that the NEA, they're talking about the National Emergencies Act. That's one of the two acts that was passed to try to put some limitations on power during emergencies. But it provided for the termination of all existing emergencies in 1978, except those making use of Section 5B of the Trading with the Enemies Act. So in other words, the 1933 banking emergency that I was just discussing and any other emergencies in 1933 that referenced that amended Section 5B of the Trading with the Enemies Act, allowing the president to treat United States citizens as enemies, remains in effect today. And this is why we still have no gold and silver coin that is money. We only have paper debt instruments circulating around being called money or being called legal tender. So where does this leave us today? Well, it leaves us with another 50 plus years of the national emergency. I mean, we're really approaching almost 100 years from 1933 for this emergency banking situation. But in addition to that, let's look at the current emergencies that are still in effect today. So once again, there's a Wikipedia page here, which is a list of national emergencies in the United States. So we can just go to mainstream sources. And we can go back, of course, here to 1917, where the Trading with the Enemies Act was first passed. And in this first column, status ended. It may not be accurate in all cases, because if we go right here, what we just talked about in 1933, which references Proclamation 2039, it said, declared a bank holiday from March 6th through March 9th using the Trading with the Enemy Act as a legal basis, the first of four emergencies. Reported Senate Report 93-549, which I've already referenced, 1973 as never having been terminated. So it puts ended here, but it says here that the Senate says that it hasn't ended. And we've looked at further evidence to know that it actually hasn't ended. So we are still under this emergency. Now, some of these other FDR emergencies may also still be in effect. If we look at them, if they reference Section 5B of the Trading with the Enemies Act, they're still in effect. But if we go down further, we can see that even Wikipedia concedes quite a large number of emergencies are still ongoing. So we have, this is the oldest one it says is still active, and this is from 1979, and it has to do with the U.S. and Iran. Now, we can actually find other emergency declarations having to do with Iran. Here we have many more emergencies, this one due to weapons of mass destruction under Clinton. We have several more from Clinton involving Iranian petroleum, narcotics traffickers. This has to do with shipping vessels, still in effect. Here, something with Sudan, an emergency still in effect. Now, if we're in the Bush era, we can see here that there's with the Western Balkans, export control regulations, terrorist act emergencies. And of course, this, as you might expect, would suspend substantial constitutional protections. Here, more related to terrorism. And we can keep going on to the present day. Bush has quite a number of them. Then we get into Obama. Obama, I think, has more than from the first Trump term, from Biden's term. So we can see that we're talking about dozens of emergencies in addition to the 1933 emergencies that are still in effect. And if we look under the most recent and current Trump administration, right, which has only been in effect for a little over 6 months, we can see quite a number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 national emergencies declared through executive orders by Trump in fewer months than that. What we can see from this exercise in legal scholarship is how we, the people living in the United States, have been completely duped and hoodwinked out of our rights by the heresy of a declared national emergency. And this is done in a clandestine manner so that it's not talked about. Every president that comes along continues to renew these emergencies because they have to be renewed on an ongoing basis. They don't publicize it. There's no White House press secretary, no photo op of them renewing these emergencies. But this is what gives them unchecked and unfettered power outside the U.S. Constitution. Now, of course, there are remedies for us in dealing with these atrocities, which is, for a different discussion. But it is so important that we understand and become aware of this situation so that we know how to protect ourselves, what is right. And if we want to try to take action, we at least know or have an inclination of what we're trying to overcome in that action. So make sure to watch this a couple more times so everything sinks in. I might have gone over some of the quotes and the statutory and other language rather quickly. So do look at it again. And there are other resources that go into a lot more detail. And I will leave a link in the show notes so you can investigate those at your leisure. All right. It's been an interesting subject, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Even if you're doing your best to live clean, you're still being exposed. From off-gassing furniture and plastics in your food to synthetic fibers, personal care products, and even medical imaging procedures, especially fat-soluble chemicals, these toxins don't respond to your average detox. They settle deep in your tissues, and you need the right tools to clear them out. That's why I created the Ultimate Detox Protocol, a free 30-day roadmap that teaches you a serious nature-based detox using pine, targeted nutrition, and a focused daily plan. You'll choose the cleansing diet that fits your needs, support your elimination pathways, and take action against the toxin load that's been holding you back. Many people who've done this protocol have reported major improvements in energy, focus, digestion, and even long-standing symptoms they thought they'd have to live with forever. Unfortunately, I can't share the full scope of results people have experienced using this protocol, not on this platform. If I did, the video would surely be taken down. But trust me, it is incredibly powerful. Download it for free at the link in the show notes. Your health is your responsibility, and this is the best place to start.